You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Thursday to you. We appreciate you being here with us on the podcast. On today's show, we'll play Ethan's Q&A with Arkansas gymnastics coach Jordan Weber. She joined us Wednesday over at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. Maybe one of the best speakers we've ever had, to be honest with you. We think you'll be interested to hear her take on her team and her time here at Arkansas. But first, we'll talk about Razorback football. We're just 2 days away from the SEC opener down at Auburn. Saturday, 2:30 kickoff on ESPN. The betting line, it's been moving slightly back and forth this week. You know, it started at 3.5. It got down to 2.5. The line today, depending on the sports book you look at, is 3 to 3.5 points in Auburn's favor. But like we've said, it's a home game for Auburn. And so pretty much it just feels kind of like a toss-up game. We'll give our predictions for the game Friday on our podcast and online at wholehogsports.com. Sam Pittman spoke out at the Catfish Hole last night for his weekly radio show, and he had some interesting insight about last week's game against UAB and this week's game against Auburn and how those two games might or might not affect one another. Very interesting. Take a listen to this.
There was a lot of good things in there. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I believe Rice was ahead of us in the fourth quarter, and the next week we beat Texas by 25. You can't have a game that can control what's going to happen the next game. We have to learn from it. We have to get better from it. And that's what I believe we've done.
Thanks to our friends over at Hogs Plus for that clip, Sawyer Radler and his team. Interesting. Quick fact check, by the way. Arkansas and Rice in 2021. Arkansas was down to Rice 17-7 in the third quarter of that game. It was 17-7 going into the fourth, and Arkansas wins 38-17. They beat Texas by 19 the next week. Probably could have won by more. Numbers aside, though, Ethan, the point is well taken. How you look one week is not necessarily how you're going to look the next. And you made a great point. You can't let maybe a disappointing outcome one week, even though they won the game, but, you know, a disappointing showing on the field, you can't let that affect what you're going to do in the week to come.
I agree, and I think that you see it all the time that teams have a little bit of a – I don't want to say if scare is the right word. Like, I never felt like Arkansas was going to lose on Saturday. I just more felt like it was underwhelming. You know, it did get dicey there at the end whenever they pulled within 30-27, but you just felt like Arkansas was going to find a way. But you see Georgia, they played a one-point game against Kentucky. I remember 2 years ago against Missouri, they not a good Missouri team. They didn't play very well, and I see how that Georgia team turned out. I'm not trying to compare Arkansas to Georgia, but I do think that you do see a lot of times, you know, just it's a week-to-week game, and I think that Arkansas more often than not would beat UAB a lot worse.
It's happened a lot of times in Pittman's career where they've looked good one week and they haven't looked good the next. I wrote down some instances. He mentioned Rice and Texas in 2021. Just go over the last few years, though. Also in 21, they lost to Ole Miss on a two-point play, 52-51 in Oxford. That was a 10-win Ole Miss team. And then the next week they come home and they get beat by Auburn by 15. Really bad turnaround. 2022, they lose at Mississippi State by 23. They go to BYU the next week and they win by 17. 2022, they win at Auburn by 14, and then they lose to Liberty the next week by 2 at home. 2022, they beat Ole Miss by 15 at home. They lose to Missouri by 2. Didn't look like the same team. And then you could even say last year at Florida, they win by 3 in overtime, and everybody's thinking, okay, maybe they get to 6 wins. They come back, and Auburn could have named it score against Arkansas. It was 48-3 at the end of the third quarter. They end up losing 48-10. There's been a lot of this topsy-turviness under Pittman.
Yeah, right there, you just laid it all out. I do remember last year that Auburn game, rolling into it thinking that Arkansas had found something out against Florida, and that just got shut down.
Well, we all thought that.
I mean, Arkansas was a 2.5-point favorite in that game, mm-hmm. and they got beat by 38. And I think that just goes to show that, you know, the guys in Vegas, I mean, it's incredible. Some of them have these lines, how good they are. But sometimes you just can't predict what's going to happen. And I think that was a case last year, just how, I mean, it's not just that Arkansas got beat. That was a thorough beating. Auburn went up 21-0 like less than 10 minutes into the game. It was domination last year.
I do these goofy efficiency ratings as we get more into the SEC season. Once we've got more data from SEC versus SEC games to compile. And there were a few times last year where they came pretty close. Like, you know, they had a close game between Georgia and Vanderbilt the first week that we did it. And everybody's like, nah, that's not gonna. It ended up being like a point off.
Yeah.
And they've come close, you know, on a number of occasions. They had Arkansas beating Auburn by 5 in that game.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing about the way those two teams had played to that point last year that would indicate that Auburn was going to do anything like that against Arkansas. And then, of course, you know, I think it was more an indictment on Arkansas than it was Auburn. But Auburn, the week after they beat Arkansas, they go home and they lose to New Mexico State by 31 or 21.
Which, okay, this is just on that note. How far has New Mexico State fallen? Because I was watching some sort of ESPN segment with Bad Bets, and they were down like 48-0 to, I think, Fresno State.
Well, they lost their quarterback to Vanderbilt.
Anyway,
Jerry Kill left, and he's at Vanderbilt now and like some sort of special advisor. Jerry Kill's one of those interesting coaches because, you know, he was at Minnesota, and they pulled some upsets when he was at Minnesota. And then he leaves for health reasons, and then he reemerges in Las Cruces, and they get the upset over Auburn. And then I didn't know what had happened to him after that. I knew that I think he got pushed out at New Mexico. You remember he had a press conference last year where he kind of went off on somebody or something and ended up, you know, he's gone at New Mexico State. And then they beat Virginia Tech, and lo and behold, there's Jerry Kill. It's like he just kind of keeps showing up in some of these big moments.
Well, New Mexico State has fallen far since that moment, I believe. And it's just, it is, there's so much just craziness that happens in college football that Arkansas can get beat like that by Auburn that then goes and loses to New Mexico State. And I think that's should be a reassuring thing for Arkansas too, though, this year going into, I mean, you have a new team and you can look at last week's UAB game and know like, hey, that wasn't a good performance. You still got to win. Maybe turn it around this week. It's just you can't go into any week, especially in the SEC, just being able to know exactly what's going to happen. Like, we're looking at Tennessee, Oklahoma this weekend, and I think the thought is just Tennessee is going to blow them out. And I'm like, I kind of feel that way now, but it also wouldn't surprise me if Oklahoma makes it a game just because of how crazy college football is.
And they're playing at home.
At home.
I think that's a big deal. New Mexico State, not to be confused with New Mexico, who Auburn beat last week down on the plains. Speaking of in Alabama, there's a great morning show down there with Greg McElroy and Cole Kubelik. It's on WJOX-FM in Birmingham. And they had Trent Dilfer on their show yesterday. Dilfer, of course, the coach at UAB. And he was discussing Arkansas and how to defend the Razorbacks. Take a listen to this.
SEC, I think they're vulnerable to be challenged at the line of scrimmage. I think you can load people around the line of scrimmage and challenge them to win one-on-one matchups. They have one very good wide receiver that will win some of his one-on-one matchups in the SEC, but not all. You're going to have to add a hat near the line of scrimmage to defend 11-on-11 football, the quarterback and the run schemes. And he's using all his Lamar Jackson stuff from Louisville. So we went back and studied some of it. Well, we're kicking ourselves in the tail as we didn't go way back. We should have watched every Lamar Jackson clip. Instead, we watched probably 30 to 40%. They pulled out, you know, old school double sliders, misdirection. Like, they pulled off quarterback pin and pull, stuff they did to Lamar, and he hadn't done it at Missouri State. So it's going to be really hard to play both. But I do think the SEC, my point being, is you have more physical perimeter players that can hold up. You can get home a little quicker. You have better pass rushers. And I do think the formula to defeat Arkansas's offense, or at least slow them down, is to really challenge zero pressures, mug pressures, lots of people around the line of scrimmage, and make him throw one-on-ones.
Trent Dilfer on Kubelik and McElroy's show on WJOX in Birmingham. That's two straight weeks now. There's been a head coach come out the next week and say, we should have watched more of Bobby Petrino's Lamar Jackson offense. At some point, these alarm bells are going to ring, and somebody's going to go back and really do a deep dive on what they did with Lamar Jackson. And it'll be interesting to see who's the first team to do that. Is it Auburn? And I'll be interested to know, like, you know, does the coach say, hey, yeah, we went back and we watched a lot of Lamar Jackson, and that's how we shut Taylen Green down, assuming they're able to do so.
I mean, all I can tell Trent Dilfer is subscribe to wholehogsports.com, man. I mean, Mike Gundy, I wrote a story last week. Mike Gundy was like, we didn't do our work enough of looking at Lamar Jackson. And then Dilfer's like, we didn't do our work enough with Lamar Jackson. It does sound like Dilfer looked at some, but he just didn't go.
Gundy didn't look at any.
Gundy was like, he said
we didn't go back that far in our scouting of Petrino.
But Dilfer said they did, just not enough. So maybe teams are inching a little closer to cracking, I guess, the code, if that's a thing. But to what Dilfer said, it is going to be interesting to see how Arkansas adjusts, because let's be real, Bobby Petrino's going to be out here playing chess, not checkers. I don't think he's going to keep things the same week to week. He's going to have adjustments.
Doesn't it sound interesting to you when Dilfer says they have one very good wide receiver? Maybe he's trying to compliment Andrew Armstrong. It also sounds like maybe he wasn't real impressed with Arkansas's receiver.
It didn't sound to me in that context like he was. I mean, it was a compliment to Andrew Armstrong, but it felt like more of a they aren't very deep at receiver.
And they haven't shown a lot of depth at receiver, right? I mean, Armstrong's had two great games. Who else has had a great game in the receiver room this year?
I'm about to say Satania's had a couple good showings.
He's had some big catches here and there.
Yeah. But like Broden, it's kind of like I haven't heard a ton of him right now about, you know, really anything. I kind of agree with him, what he said. Like, they have, to this point, you have one good receiver. I mean, if you have Andrew Armstrong, who is second in the SEC in receiving yards, and he's only played two games, I mean, you got a really good receiver on your hands there with him. But what are the other ones doing? I mean, it's at some point, you got to have more people getting, like, involved. I don't know what that looks like. Maybe how you open it up some. But you have capable receivers, I think. It's just, are they going to start showing it?
Of course, Luke Haas is one of those. Only 7 targets so far through 3 games for him. That's been a little bit of a surprise. When you hear Dilfer talk about, you know, I would pack the line against them, makes you wonder how much he respects Arkansas's line play, especially in the passing game. You know, it's one thing to be a good run-blocking offensive line. I think Arkansas's got a decent run-blocking offensive line. But in the passing game, it seems like they're having some issues.
Yeah, and I'd actually, what it reminded me of whenever Trent Dilfer said that was what Sam Pittman said at Oklahoma State of what killed them on a 4th, and I think it was the 4th and 5 that they tried to go empty, and they couldn't block it. Mm. And it sounds like Dilfer maybe seeing the same thing, that's how you beat Arkansas, is you just kind of bring it at them. They have not been good in pass protection, but they haven't. It's not as bad as last year, if that's saying anything, to where it probably seems a little better to Arkansas fans. And also, Taylen Green, he's really dynamic with his legs, so he can kind of make up for some of those missed assignments. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see how teams adjust. Arkansas's running the ball really well. Their run blocking is good. Luke Haas, we talked about, he's not as involved as a receiver right now, but he has by PFF, take it for what it's worth, has the number one run blocking grade by an SEC tight end right now. It'll be interesting to see how teams adjust to maybe trying to stop the run more and see if Arkansas can make them pay beating them over the top.
Tomorrow on our show, we'll have Adam Cole. He covers Auburn football for the Opelika News. We'll talk to him about the Tigers. Want to tell you, you can stay on top of all the Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. Get the most complete coverage in one location. A subscription will give you 20-plus issues of Hogs Illustrated magazine. Also gives you complete access to our website at wholehogsports.com. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. You can join now at hogsillustrated.com/subscribe or call 479-684-5509. I mention this all the time. We're deep into our work on the basketball preview, and I think you'll want to see that. So call right now, 479-684-5509 or hogsillustrated.com/subscribe to make sure you're subscribed before that basketball preview comes out in we're within a couple of weeks now, right, of that coming out?
Yeah, I'm not sure the exact print date, but we're turning in our material next week. So yeah, it's going to be here before you know it.
Early to mid-October is when that ought to hit the newsstands. Arkansas soccer begins its SEC season tonight, 6:30. Are we calling it a kickoff? Is that right? Kickoff for soccer?
Don't ask.
First touch, and I think Anthony about fell out of his chair when I said that one time.
Yeah, I have no clue. I'm going to call it the kickoff. If I'm wrong, sue me. But, hey, Arkansas soccer, they score a lot of goals. They're fun to watch. That's about my soccer extent of knowledge.
SEC Network Plus is going to be where you can watch that tonight. Arkansas unbeaten going into SEC play. LSU, they've got a pretty good soccer program. They're 5-2-1. Going into this game, Arkansas ranked number 3 right now nationally. The tie is the highest ranking that the Razorbacks have ever had. One other item here before we get to Jordan Weber, the Arkansas basketball schedule still coming together somewhat. I think we got like our 39th different schedule release yesterday or something like that, right?
I swear, it's just the keep on kicking it down the road to get some more. It's like this PR, just how can you squeeze more out of the tube?
Well, just to give you an idea of what had happened, they announced who they're going to play, and then they announced who they're going to play and where they're going to play them, and then they announced the SEC schedule, but with the midweeks as a bunch of either ors. It could be Tuesday, it could be Wednesday. Now we're at the point that they've announced, okay, now we know what Tuesday and Wednesday are going to be. Still don't have tip-off times or television networks. That'll be a separate announcement that's coming down.
This is an SEC-wide issue right now. I mean, we're getting TV just – I don't even – I'm waiting till the week.
I laugh whenever they say, "Hey, we've got a TV announcement for Arkansas and Auburn." It'll either be this time or this time, and it'll be on one of these four different networks.
Yeah, I must say, okay, great. We went from time of day to two times during that time of day with three. I don't care anymore. I just tell me a week before what it's going to be on whenever they actually know.
They promised that it would be more like it would give you more of a. Like an advance notice, but I'm not so sure that
it was helpful to get.
It's almost like it's created more announcement opportunities for him.
It was helpful to get in the off season. I think time of day, what time of day it's going to be. Because I mean, thinking about this for travel purposes, I know for us it's different as media covering, but for fans too, it's like I can plan that if this is an 11 a.m. game, I need to go the night before.
Mm-hmm.
So that's helpful. But whenever you're just like, all right, it's going to be afternoon time slot, and then a week before they say, hey, we got the TV announcement and time, and it's okay, it's either 2:30 or 3:15, and it's on one. It's just pick. I don't know.
That's where Arkansas and A&M are, by the way. It's either gonna be 2:30 or 3:15.
Yeah,
and we'll know after the games this weekend where exactly they put the kickoff. Where I'm going back to basketball real quick. Before we got off.
Sorry, it's really frustrating.
There's only two games on Tuesdays this year, and we were talking about this beforehand. You know, used to, it felt like the Tuesday games, there was kind of a status to that.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's not as big of a deal anymore.
Yeah, Super Tuesday. I remember back whenever, who was it with Jimmy Dykes? Was it Brad Nessler?
Brad Nessler was with them at one point, yeah.
Those were always big games, and I always enjoyed those. I think historically, if I'm remembering correctly, it was like an ACC game and an SEC on the same night, maybe. It was SEC and one other.
ACC was usually on Monday because they've got the big Monday package.
Maybe Big 12 or Big 10. It was one of them. Some of them. And there were just two big games that made it felt like a normal Saturday game for comparing this to football. You know how Saturday is just the big day.
The Tuesday night games always seem like they just something about having Jimmy and Brad Nessler there.
Yeah.
It had a big feel to it.
It was college or SEC basketball's equivalent, I feel like, of Monday night football. It was just fun, I think. It was
SEC basketball's. Because college basketball's version would be Big Monday.
I said SEC basketball.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
See, we don't listen to each other. We're still having
this
problem.
SEC basketball's it was a version of Monday Night Football, in my opinion, and it was fun. So, all this to say, I'm not sure Arkansas, Vandy, and who was the other team?
LSU.
I'm not sure those moved the needle as much as Tuesday games did in the past.
Both of those games on the road, by the way. One's in Baton Rouge, and one is in Nashville.
Oh, my gosh. That is my least favorite arena, hands down, in the nation.
I'm going to be quiet and listen to Ethan now. He's got a Q&A with Jordan Weber coming up. But first, a word from our sponsors.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns September 23rd through the 29th for the 18th consecutive year. Watch former Razorbacks and 2024 Olympians Maria Fassi and Gabby Lopez compete against the world's best female golfers at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers. The NWA Championship is so much more than a golf tournament, with something for everyone to enjoy and activities for fans of all ages. Daily tickets are only $10, and kids 17 and under get in free with a ticketed adult. Get your tickets today at nwachampionship.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We're going to get to Ethan's conversation with Jordan Weber here in just a second, but we want to tell you first about our friends over at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. All right, as we mentioned earlier, Jordan Weber was our guest yesterday at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. We're going to play that Q&A between she and Ethan Westerman now.
Jordan, thanks for being here. Want to talk about the Olympics real quick. Obviously, they're fresh on people's mind because just happened. Over a decade removed from yourself being in the Olympics, you know, how do you kind of look back at that now and being so far removed?
It's weird. It's weird to watch because on one hand, it feels just like yesterday. On the other hand, it feels like forever ago. So I'm in such a different phase of life now, but you know, I love that every 4 years, the entire world gets so excited about the sport of gymnastics, and everybody's watching it, right? It's one of the most popular Olympic sports, and I watch the girls compete, and I know what it takes to get there in the first place, and I know the level of pressure and intensity and just the weight that you feel when you're competing. I mean, literally the beam is 4 feet off the ground, 4 inches wide. I mean, you're competing out there knowing you're representing the entire country in the Olympic Games. Like, that is a very intense situation. So I know what that feels like, and I'm just the biggest cheerleader of all of our gymnasts that are competing representing Team USA now. I love it. We actually had, she was one of our alternates for our Olympic team this year, is a freshman on the Arkansas team this year. So that was really cool. I mean, on one hand, I was like, I really hope nobody gets injured. On the other hand, I was like, if someone gets hurt, she gets to go in and compete. So that was a weird feeling, but I'm just the biggest cheerleader of them. And honestly, I love that now there's a lot of crossover between college gymnasts and those that are trying for the Olympic team. You have people like Sumi Lee and Jordan Childs who are kind of flipping back and forth between the two worlds. And it's creating a lot of exposure for college gymnastics, I think, that we've ever had before.
So you talked on this a little bit ago, but of course you spent time as a volunteer coach under UCLA coach Valerie Condisfield, who's mm-hmm. a legend in the sport. And you talked about it a second ago, you've credited her with just letting you actually let you do your job with the floor exercise. How have you incorporated that into how you coach now? Anything else you maybe learned from her?
Yeah, so we called her Miss Val. She coached at UCLA for 29 years, I believe, and won 7 national championships there. I'm gonna give a little backstory real quick. So her husband, his name is Bobby Field. He played football here at Arkansas back in the 70s. A lot of people know him as Monster Man. I don't know, there was some big game that he played in and they nicknamed him Monster Man. So you can throw that out there and you'll sound pretty knowledgeable about Arkansas football history. But anyway, they actually live here in Fayetteville now, which is so amazing. They both retired from UCLA and wanted to move somewhere else outside of Los Angeles, and they chose to live in Fayetteville. So I'm so blessed to have one of my greatest mentors and friends in Ms. Val and Bobby here in Arkansas. But you know, I am so grateful for the time I spent working with her because she really did allow me to learn so many things. Miss Val was never a gymnast. She really wasn't even a coach before she got the head coaching job at UCLA. She was actually a ballerina. And so the way she thinks about coaching was just so different than anything I had ever known of before. She had very like an unconventional way of doing things, but it really kind of got me out of my normal gymnastics bubble and allowed me to think about coaching differently. I think that's kind of where my philosophy of really a holistic approach of the student athlete kind of comes from, because she really didn't see them as gymnasts. She saw them as people, athletes, you know, things other than just the gymnastics that they do. And I think I learned from her how to teach life lessons through sport and kind of show those parallels between, hey, this is something you're going to approach in the gym and on the competition floor. And guess what? Life is going to be very similar, just a little bit different. You're not wearing a leotard when you encounter it. So I learned a ton from her. She knows her and I have very different personalities, so naturally our coaching styles are just a little bit different. But being able to have that experience, and I stayed there as volunteer coach for 3 years when I could have gone other places and became an assistant coach somewhere. But I knew I was going to learn the most under her, and she gave me like a little bit more free rein to just do things. And so that's why I ended up staying at UCLA for those years as volunteer.
Didn't you say that leading up to coming to be introduced as Arkansas's coach, you went to her husband to learn how to call the Hogs?
I did, yes. And he actually, he flew out with me, like when Hunter came and when I got hired, Hunter came and picked me up in LA, and Bobby flew with me on the plane to come out here and was here for my press conference. So they're like family to me. And Bobby actually married my husband and I last year. So that, if that gives you a sense of just the meaningful relationship that we have with the two of them, I don't know what else does.
Yeah. So you talked about the interview process with Hunter. You were 23 years old, and he said that at the time, you know, introducing you, that he was blown away just with characteristics that you embodied. And he said that he had to go back and triple check that you were 23. You know, he said you were wise and mature well beyond your years. What do you think, you know, prepared you at 23 to be able to walk confident into an interview like that to be a head coach?
I still can't even believe he hired me. I think from the time that I stepped foot as a freshman in college, I really was just studying and observing and soaking in as much knowledge and information as I could. I studied psychology when I was in school because I've always just been fascinated by people and human behavior, and also just, you know, like the power of the mind when it comes to athletics and how you can utilize your mind more than just the physical preparation in our sports. That's why I originally chose to study psychology, but I also am a big reader, and so I spent years while I was there at UCLA just reading different books on psychology and leadership and different coaching styles and just kind of soaking up a lot of information and then actually being able to apply it in my time there. And I mean, I would have meetings with different support staff members. Hey, teach me about budget. Teach me about how to manage a budget for a program. Teach me. I was in every single marketing meeting that we had for the gymnastics program there. I learned a ton, you know, figuring out how to market a UCLA gymnastics meet when you've got Lakers, Clippers, Kings, like a million other sporting events to go to on a Saturday, and we have had to get people to choose gymnastics. So learned a ton there. I think I just had that mindset that, you know, I may not know everything. This is exactly what I told Hunter. I may not know everything, but I can assure you that I'm confident I can figure it out, and I'll work hard and use my resources and ask the right questions. And so I think he appreciated that I didn't walk into that interview just being like, yeah, I know everything about being a head coach. I was just a volunteer coach. I clearly didn't know everything, but I just, I think I just had that lack of ego, but still the good amount of confidence that is required to step into a role like this.
And you both acknowledged at the time that your learning curve as a head coach would be more than, you know, your typical head coach, that you said he'd be along to assist you with all that. What have been, you know, in hindsight, you've been doing it a little bit now, some of those learning curves that you figured out?
Sure.
I mean, especially the first year, just asking questions, just asking a ton of questions. You know, and just really, I think the most important thing I did my first year was I hired a leadership coach to help me just kind of get organized. And the first most important thing I did was hire my staff and really surrounded myself with the people that complimented me and had, you know, strengths that maybe complimented my weaknesses. And so That was probably the most important thing I did was ask for that help in that way. But just trusting myself and you know, just giving myself that patience the first couple of years was important. And, you know, I was stepping into a team. You can think of it kind of like I adopted this team that I didn't recruit. And so a lot of it was trying to gain their trust and buy-in. I mean, I didn't recruit any of them, so they signed up for something different than what we were giving them. So that took a while just to kind of gain that trust and buy-in. But as we slowly started recruiting our own athletes, like, we just naturally started to feel that shift of automatic buy-in and belief in who we are as a coaching staff, and that has made such a big difference. But yeah, I think those first couple of years just asking a lot of questions and having a really great staff around me. My sport administrator at the time was fantastic. We have a different one now because she retired, but both have been amazing. You know, and I think my thing I'm most grateful for is Hunter, because he's just such a big advocate for not just women's athletics, but gymnastics. And so I've just been grateful for that, because when you have an athletic director that invests in an Olympic sport that's not revenue producing typically, it makes the biggest difference. I really feel the belief from Hunter and the patience from Hunter, and he has high expectations for me, but not as high as I have for myself. And so we really just mesh well in that way.
Hope you're enjoying our conversation with Ethan Westerman and Jordan Weber. I want to tell you that Hunter Juracek is going to be our next guest at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club noon next Wednesday, September 25th, at Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can get your tickets online now at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com. Hunter Juracek, the Arkansas Athletic Director, lots that we want to talk with him about next week. Hope we'll see you there as well. When we come back, we'll have the second part of Ethan's Q&A with Jordan Weber, but first, another word from our sponsors.
Taste, sip, sample, and discover the very best restaurants and chefs Northwest Arkansas has to offer at the Bite Experience at the LPGA, a unique culinary experience on site at the Northwest Arkansas Championship. Tickets are available Friday, September 27th through Sunday, September 29th, offering access to the best golf viewing and food and beverage samples from over 30 local restaurants. You don't want to miss this. Tickets are available for $45 a day. Get yours before they sell out at BiteNWA.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back in. We'll continue a conversation with Jordan Weber here in just a moment. First, we want to tell you about our friends over at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs and the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. Here's the second part of Ethan's conversation with Jordan Weber.
I think a lot of people came to your meets last season anxiously awaiting whenever y'all got on your floor exercise, because that was, you know, what y'all were so good at. When you talk about, I know you coached at UCLA, the floor team, y'all were top ranked then. You know what it takes to have a good floor team. What is that?
It's a big puzzle of a bunch of different things. I mean, it's usually people's favorite event to watch. It is the one event where we really get to engage our audience and our crowd. And, you know, for those that have been in Barnhill for Bud Walton for gymnastics meet, you know, we always put the floor right next to the student section, because we want our fans to feel like they are a part of their performances. And to be honest, when our athletes are performing outward, meaning they're not just in their own little bubble and only focused on their skills, the gymnastics is usually better. We prepare them in a way where they shouldn't have to do anything different in competition than they do in practice, so they can just sort of be free to perform. And so, you know, floor is one of those events where you've got tumbling, you've got leaps, you've got choreography. It requires an incredible amount of endurance. And I'm not sure if you've ever like sprinted for a minute and a half straight. That's basically what it's like. Then imagine flipping your body through the air and landing, and then dancing and smiling and having to perform. It's really hard, which is usually the goal, but it requires a really high amount of endurance. So floor is like a puzzle, kind of putting all those things together, but it really comes down to the training and how we prepare. And I am, my standards are very high for the quality of their training. So if it's not where it needs to be, we keep going, and we demand that level of excellence in practice, so that it really comes together. And it's almost, I guess, easy for them in competition. They don't have to think so hard and try so hard.
Yeah, I don't sprint for a minute and a half, and if I try to do a front flip, it'll break my neck. Real quick, your outfit choice for the NCAA regional finals in Budwall last year. There's a story about your outfit that you wore for that.
Yeah, did you find that out, or did someone else tell you that? That's a really like specific.
I was told by somebody.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
So the outfit that I wore day two regionals when we qualified to nationals was the same outfit I wore when Hunter picked me up on the plane and I flew out for my first day press conference here. And I thought about it a little bit. It was kind of if we make it to nationals, this would be a really cool story kind of thing. But it obviously has a lot of sentimental value. It's, I don't play my outfit that deep usually, but I thought it might be cool. And then qualifying to nationals, I thought that was really special.
Yeah. You've said before that true champions are built when you coach the whole person and not just the athlete. Can you speak more on that and how maybe you've grown to get better at that, the more you've gotten to coaching?
Yeah. So it stems a lot from my own experience as an athlete. I achieved a really high level of success, but for me growing up in the sport, success was equated with winning. And if I wasn't the best, if I didn't win, if it wasn't number one in anything, could have been like, how many pull-ups can you do? If I wasn't the best, I didn't do the most pull-ups, it was absolute failure. Kind of processing through my gymnastics career, before I got into coaching, I really wanted to change for myself what that definition of success was, because I was really influenced in my time at UCLA by John Wooden's philosophies, and you learned a lot about him when you go to school there. And his definition of success says that success is the peace of mind that you get when you do everything that you're capable of doing to be successful. And it's really that feeling. It's not necessarily about achieving it. It's about how you feel. And so kind of refocusing, my definition of success, it was the most important piece to then figure out my coaching philosophy. And I said it before, but college gymnastics in those 4 years of their lives, they're so meaningful. And I feel such a huge amount of responsibility to guide them through all of the challenges they're going to approach in those 4 years, whether they be gymnastics related or not, so that they are ready when they graduate to just take on life. As we all know, as adults, life is hard and it hits you. It's going to at some point or another in all different ways. Kind of approaching coaching from like, hey, you can come in my office and talk to me about anything but gymnastics if you want to. It could be relationships, it could be roommate stuff, it could be family, it could be school, career, whatever it is. Like, I see myself as more of like a life coach than a gymnastics coach, and gymnastics is just one piece of what they do. And when they're happy and healthy and thriving as people, the gymnastics is usually where it needs to be. When you're not happy, healthy, and thriving as a person, the gymnastics suffer. So I truly believe that. And I do believe that champions are created when you approach it that way. And you may be able to create champions doing it, dictating change versus motivating change, but it's not going to be long-term sustainable. And they're going to leave college feeling like, what's life after gymnastics? How can I find my own definition of success? That's really kind of how that was influenced. And like I said before, a lot of that stems from this style, but yeah, that's pretty much it.
Last thing I got for you, you've seen it all in gymnastics, club, elite, and college level. What advice would you give? What's the number one advice you give to maybe a little girl who's like you at 4 years old, who's like, let me try this out, just getting into the sport? What's some of your advice?
back on?
I would say, obviously, hard work. You can't replace hard work. So just whatever you want to achieve, it's going to take a lot of hard work and just buy into the process. We talk with our team a lot about obsessing over the process. That's one of our themes this year, because it's not just about winning meets. It's about, in order to win meets, you really have to obsess over all the little things, the less comfortable, the less easy things that are going to help you get to those wins. So work really hard for what you want to achieve. But the other piece of that is arguably even more important is love what you do and figure out ways to find joy in that process. I mean, that's something that if you were to walk into the Bev Lewis Center and look into the windows of our gym, you absolutely will see sweat and hard work, and just you will see the process and that it's hard. But you will also see a lot of smiles, a lot of laughing, a lot of really positive interactions with teammates and coaching staff, because they truly love what they do and they find so much joy in being there every single day and achieving things with their team. So. Love what you do, and if you don't love it, then shift to something else, because I think that's just so important in life. Whatever you're doing, you have to have that love for it in order to really push yourself to the level that you need to.
Jordan, thanks so much. Everybody, please give her another round.
We appreciate you joining us today on our podcast. We'll be back with our final podcast of the week on Friday. Adam Cole, who covers the Auburn Tigers, will be with us. We'll talk more about Auburn. We'll give our weekend predictions. Until then, hope to see you at WholeHogSports.com. Have a great day, everyone.